With Vrbo's last-minute deals, you can save over $50 on your spring getaway. So whether it's a mountain escape, city break, or a week at the beach, there's still time to get great discounts. Book your next stay now.
Average savings $72. Select homes only.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's favorite gun-toting, Bible-clinging, deplorable American.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah.
And hello, everybody. Welcome to the Todd Starnes Radio Show. We are broadcasting border to border, coast to coast, across the Fruited Plain. And we've got a lot of ground to cover today, everybody. By the way, President Trump is expected to hold a news conference about midway through our show, and we are going to take that news conference live when it happens. We'll have to dip in and out of it because we have to take our mandatory commercial breaks to pay our bills. But we will be monitoring everything the president has to say. The president, of course, coming out and doing a blow-by-blow of what happened over the weekend in this truly historic moment when American forces went deep into Iran to retrieve the colonel, the Air Force colonel, who was shot down over Iran. And we don't know the guy's name just yet. They're not releasing all that information. They will. They'll get around to releasing all of that intel. But let me just say that this was truly a unique moment in American history. I hope as you were listening to all of the reports coming out over the weekend that you felt this this burst of pride in being an American citizen, knowing that in the United States of America, the greatest fighting force on the planet, the U.S. military, our armed forces, no man is left behind. And it's the idea of leaving the 99 to retrieve the one. That's what happened in Iran. And I don't think that a lot of people understand that. I don't think that a lot of liberals understand that. Because in its essence, that is really what it means to be pro-life, is that every life matters. And in this case, you had hundreds of men and women that were willing to put their lives on the line to go into the line of fire, to go behind enemy lines to retrieve this wounded warrior. And I have no doubt, folks, this is going to become a major motion picture. I have no doubt about that. I mean, you can't imagine, you just can't imagine a storyline like this. He was shot down on Good Friday. He was rescued on Easter Sunday. And as he was being shot down, by the way, this gentleman, this Air Force colonel, who happens to be a man of faith, said, "God is good." So truly just a beautiful moment in American history and something that we ought to be celebrating. There are liberals out there. This is just mind-blowing to me. Liberals are out there saying, "Well, how much did it cost us? That fuel, that airplane fuel, it's not free, you know." And there are many in the left-wing media that are now questioning President Trump and whether or not we should have even gone in. And those people hate America. And that's all there is to it. And there are people, and I think when, you know, the longer this war goes on, the more you are going to see people for who they really are. Now look, President Trump has given a deadline, and that deadline is tomorrow, Tuesday, 8 o'clock tomorrow night. And the president said the Straits of Hormuz are going to have to be open, and if they're not, well, we're going to start targeting your infrastructure. We're going after the power plants. We're going after the bridges. And now everybody is accusing the president of committing war crimes, which is simply not true. As a matter of fact, during war, you are allowed to knock out things like power plants, and also, believe it or not, ladies and gentlemen, you can even knock out the bridges, because those bridges are being used by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard to move around troops. So Trump is well within his rights to do what needs to be done to bring this war to a close. Now, there are a lot of folks out there who are wondering exactly what are we doing over there. We're going to hopefully get answers to that at 1 o'clock Eastern when the president comes out and when he addresses the American people. Right now, he's on the lawn of the White House hanging out with little boys and girls with the annual White House Easter egg roll. The president also taking questions from reporters while he was there. I don't know why he does this. I know it frustrates the president, and I get that. Cut number 8, please.
Taking care of the Iranian people, if you're bombing.
Yeah, who are you with? Who are you with?
PBS.
Well, that's a radical left group of lunatics, if you're with. Let me just tell you, very fair question. The Iranian people, when they don't hear bombs go off, they're upset. They want to hear bombs because they want to be free. And the only reason they're not out protesting, you know that, is because they were informed that if they protest, like the wrestler and his friends, if they protest, they will be shot immediately. And that's an edict. That's in writing. If they protest, if they go out in the streets, they will be immediately shot. They don't have guns. You know, we sent some guns, but the group that was supposed to give, which I said would happen to my people, I said it, I called it exactly. We sent guns, a lot of guns. They were supposed to go to the people so they could fight back against these thugs. You know what happened? The people that they sent them to kept them because they said, what a beautiful gun, I think I'll keep it. So I'm very upset with a certain group of people, and they're going to pay a big price for that.
All right. I know that the band was slightly distracted. They were dropping some beats there down at the White House. I like the music. But the president, first of all, who let PBS in? I thought they were bankrupt, right? So the PBS reporter, how are you helping the Iranian people when you're bombing them? All right, are you kidding? The Iranian people are literally in the streets cheering every time a bomb is dropped. Because they've borne the brunt of all of this, and they know exactly what's going on. And look, it is tough. Trump is right, and that reporting came out over the weekend that we had apparently given the Kurds all of these weapons, and the Kurds were supposed to turn the weapons over to the Iranian people, and that didn't happen. And Trump said, I tried to tell everybody, but that's water under the bridge at this point. So anyway, it's difficult for a lot of folks to understand this, and I want to do my best during the show today to help us all understand what's going on here, because a lot of folks believe that Trump has betrayed them. Marjorie Taylor Greene is out there, and she's accusing Trump of being mentally ill. She's Marjorie Taylor Greene saying President Trump is insane. Candace Owens says that the administration is now demonic, satanic. But in reality, ladies and gentlemen, here's what's happening. Trump has not started a new war. Trump has lived up to his campaign promise. He has not started a war. He's finishing one that should have been finished back in 1979. 7 U.S. presidents had the opportunity to put a stop to all of this, but they did not have the manhood. They did not have the courage, the fortitude to do what needed to be done. I mean, it really is that simple. And Donald Trump said, you know what? Enough is enough. Now, keep in mind, and I know this is hard for all you folks out there in social media world to comprehend, but Donald Trump actually has better intel than you do. And whatever intel he got was serious enough that he said, we've got to put a stop to this once and for all. Now, If I have a beef, I think the president should have gone shock and awe from day one. No need for this to drag on. You know, the White House initially said it's going to be a 4 to 5 week war. Well, we're entering week 6 now, and there's no end in sight. As a matter of fact, the Iranians told Trump to go pound sand. So we'll see what happens tomorrow night when the deadline expires. But right now, ladies and gentlemen, you need to understand that the president needs our backing here. And the question is, do you think the president is doing the right thing here? Many of you, I know, have sincere disagreements about all of this. But let me just say this as we go to break. Regardless of what you think about this White House, What happened over the weekend is a source of pride for every American citizen. I mean, it ought to be. And the reason why people are angry is they hate America. All these Democrats out there, they hate America. They hate our military. And there are a lot of people in our media right now, and they want us to lose. They want American troops to die in Iran. They want us to lose this war. Their hatred of Donald Trump surpasses their love for this country. And that's why you literally have Democrats, people in Hollywood and the legacy media, and they're actually rooting for the Iranians. But I don't want you to think about that right now. I want you to think about the message this is sending to all those 16, 17, 18-year-old boys they're watching what happened, this band of brotherhood that we saw unfold over the weekend. And I'm telling you something. I do not be surprised if every single military recruiting station around this country is buzzing with activity today as these young men sign up to be a part of the greatest fighting force in the world. For me, that's the big story here. And it also sends a message to the world, don't mess with us, because we will fight back, and we will fight back hard. All right, got to take a break. Opening up the phone lines, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Hope you had a great, great weekend, Good Friday services, Easter Sunday services. Great. As a matter of fact, met three listeners to the radio show at the Peabody Hotel, the Grand Hotel of the South. And what a wonderful thing that was. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. All right, got to take a break. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody. Todd Stearns here. And I've got to tell you about my friends at PhD Weight Loss, my very good friends at PhD Weight Loss. I'm down 12 pounds already. And at PhD Weight Loss, they've identified that one thing, and they built a plan that works with your body and not against it. If you call now, they're going to give you 2 free weeks in the program and pay for your food so you can finally see real results without more trial and error. If you're done with the yo-yo dieting and you want clarity, call PhD Weight Loss now and mention Starnes. No more guessing, just answers. Call 864-644-1900 and say, Starnes, you're going to get 2 free weeks. You can't miss out on this, folks. 864-644-1900. Say the word Starnes or visit phdweightloss.com. That's phdweightloss.com. The phone number, one more time, 864-644-1900, and say Starnes. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. Let's go right to our phone lines, 901-260-5926. Gary in Daytona Beach, Florida, WOCA, our great affiliate there. Hi, Gary, what's on your mind today?
On my mind is how thankful the operation of rescuing the service member went so well, but it was the 48 hours of listening to about 90% of the network. I won't say root, but they were running so many scenarios on how and what would happen to this service member when he's captured and how it would turn the epic fury around and how Trump has bungled it. And I can only think about the family members, if you happen to even be on the network where they've got somebody from a war think tank or a Trump-hating former member of the military who is now daybreak, and now, you know, the Iranian forces will, you know, have surrounded that area. I mean, it was constant, not on how he will be rescued and how much prayers and how much military force to rescue him. It was all about what might they do to him when they capture him and how will they use him. And it was bizarre on how much hate there is out there.
There is the hatred of Trump is, it's a sickness and it's a disease. And we've got to figure out, this is going to be studied and analyzed, I have no doubt, for years to come. But we've got some sick people in this country, Gary. And the reality is there are some in our media, some in the Democrat Party. I think only five or six Democrats actually put out messages celebrating the fact that we had been able to rescue this downed pilot. That tells you everything you need to know about these Democrats. Gary, thank you for the call this morning. 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. By the way, real quick, I want to make sure we get to this, because this really, there was something that really bothered me over the weekend. And it was happening among the social media influencer crowd. And I'm not talking about the Candace Owens and all those folks. I'm talking about others. And what you need to understand is that a lot of these people on social media, they make their money based on clicks. So they post all of this outrageous stuff. And it's really shocking, a lot of it, which is why we have to tell our crew, if there's something on Twitter, make sure that we get a second or third source just to verify the information. So anyway, they're searching over the weekend. I don't know if you guys caught on to this, but they're searching for the airmen. And then all of a sudden, you have these so-called conservative social media influencers, and they were posting all of this intel. And it was amazing that all of these MAGA social media folks were using exclusive sources, sharing vital information on the search for the missing crew member. And it got so bad that at one point there were a couple of folks that were actually saying, well, they're looking for the missing airman in this particular spot, and that's where we think this person is. I mean, it was really amazing to me that these MAGA influencers are sharing details, and they were sharing details not even the White House or the Pentagon was revealing. And that was the clue for me. When the White House shuts up, when Trump shuts up, when the Pentagon shuts up, that tells me that we ought to shut up because something is about to go down. And of course it did. But in essence, I'm not even sure that this even factored into what these folks were doing. But they were basically providing information that could have aided and abetted the enemy during a time of war. And for what? For clicks? For cash? For notoriety? I mean, it's absolutely disgusting and un-American. Some guy right now, I don't know why this popped up on my feed. Some guy in Florida, he's got something like 20,000 followers or he goes, he's disgusted. I'm just enraged. All of you people, I was the first one to announce to the world that the airman had been found. Really, Mr. Florida man? You over there right now? Were you in one of the rescue planes? If not, sir, shut up. But honestly, we need to get a handle on this. And I mean, I would just take all these, if all of these folks, these MAGA people, if they really were getting intel, they were getting it from leaks from within the Pentagon. So here's what Congress ought to do. I think Congress ought to just subpoena all of the social media influencers and force them to reveal who the traitors were. Who are those people inside the Pentagon that were leaking information to you? But here's what I think is really going on. I don't think a single person in the Pentagon released any information. I don't think they leaked any information. I think a lot of these social media influencers are just making things up. That's what I think was going on. And we should be counting our blessings that all of that information that they were sharing did not wind up getting a wounded warrior killed. But it's just beyond me that people are doing stuff like this. And I'm telling you, I unfollowed a lot of these folks over the weekend. They've lost credibility, but more importantly, they're un-American. Un-American. All right, got to take a break here, folks. 901-260-5926 is our telephone number. That's 901-260-5926. Hang tight. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Here's something most people don't know. When Warren Buffett was just 13 years old, he didn't put his money into a savings account. While other kids were earning next to nothing at local banks, Buffett put $114 into a little-known investment. Today, that $114 would be worth over $15 million. And it wasn't a risky trade, it wasn't even insider knowledge. It was an account that's been around since 1888, and over the last 25 years, it's averaged 29% a year. That's what happens when your money is allowed to compound. Compare that to today's savings accounts, paying less than 0.5%. While inflation quietly eats away at your buying power. Buffett understood early, banks are great businesses, just not for savers. If you'd like to see what some investors call the 29% account, go now to secretaccount29.com. That's secretaccount, the numbers, 29.com. Secretaccount29.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. So, look, over the weekend, President Trump was pretty active there on the social media platform. You know, he does a lot of stuff over on Truth Social. And we have a nice little following over there. Most of our folks are on Facebook or Instagram, many of the other platforms. But anyway, President Trump, he loves to post stuff over there, and he does it at all hours of the day. I don't know how he does it. I don't know. Anyway, this is what he wrote. I'm curious to hear thoughts about this because there are a lot of good church going folks, and they're just really disappointed in the president. So anyway, here's what Trump wrote. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the blanking straight, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah, President Donald J. Trump. So by the way, he dropped the G. So does that make it like less offensive when you drop the G there, Dylan?
It's less formal, less, for sure.
It's a little slang, dropping some street slang.
Yeah, it is street talk. That's what it is.
First of all, and there are like never Trump Christians out there. How dare he praise Allah on Easter Sunday? Okay. Well, first of all, breathe. Second of all, I don't think that's what's going on here. The president has not converted. No, the president was mocking Allah. That's what that's all about. Which, by the way, does open us up to a holy war, but that's a conversation for another day. So what's going on here? Why the language? People are very upset over the use of the language, and they said President Trump should only be dropping bombs, not F-bombs. So, look, is it language that I would use? No, and I'm just wondering if any of you... You don't have a problem with what President Trump said. I'd like to hear from you. 901-260-5926. Again, that's 901-260-5926. But I want to try to put this in some context. So years ago, I watched the movie Patton, and I don't know if any of you have seen that movie, but really they pretty much lifted a lot of the dialogue from General George S. Patton Jr.'s speeches. And there's something else going on. It's not that Trump was just, you know, just randomly cursing on social media. There was something much bigger going on here. So Patton talked about all of this. There is an organization called the Modern War Institute, and they said George Patton actually was a very nice guy, but he used foul language, especially during times of war. And they say he liked to give it to the troops double dirty. He said you can't run an army without profanity. And here's the thing. General Patton said it had to be eloquent profanity. An army without profanity could not This is a great line. This is a direct quote. An army without profanity could not fight its way out of a piss-soaked paper bag. Oh, that is eloquent, isn't it? It gives very descriptive. Probably his best-known speech, which he delivered with small variations on numerous occasions, was faced with explicatives. The speech became part of American culture, due in great part to George C. Scott's Oscar-winning performance of General Patton in the 1970 movie Patton. Dylan, have you ever seen Patton?
I have not.
One of the great films of all time. And there's it opens up where he's giving a speech. It's Patton, and he's dressed in military attire, and he is giving this speech behind a massive American flag. The imagery is just remarkable. So anyway, the speech, as Patton's officers used to call it, was full of blood and guts, as well as plenty of cursing for effect. They say Patton was much of an actor as he was a fine general, and he purposely cultivated what he called his war face. He was aware that his men were watching him constantly, and he strived to lead by his words as much as he did by his actions. Some officers found his use of obscenities in the speech disappointing, viewing it as unprofessional conduct. Patton's one-time subordinate and later superior, General Omar Bradley, was critical of his use of vulgar words and phrases. The question of whether swearing to a powerful rhetorical device or a character blemish might seem trivial, but the art of leadership is not, and Patton was an extraordinarily gifted combat leader, and he had the ability to motivate soldiers under his command to close with and kill the enemy in a prodigious manner. And that's what I think Trump was doing here. That message, first of all, was for the Iranians, but number two, I think it was also for our troops in the theater of conflict. And they need to know that their president stands with them, but the president also speaks their language. And I'm just going to tell you, and I know this may come as a shock, but, you know, if you're in the middle of a war, and here we don't have soldiers, boots on the ground just yet, but when you've got airmen and they're being shot at, and in some cases shot down, you may say things that normally you would not say at a Sunday church social. I know that's a stretch here, but it's true. So all that to say, maybe, just maybe, President Trump was invoking his inner George Patton here. Maybe that's what was really going on. But again, as Patton said, you can't run an army without profanity. And I'm sure some of the chaplains may disagree with that, but the reality is, this is not church. It's war. And sometimes war is ugly, and sometimes war is, it's profane. So I do not have a problem with what the president said. Now, there's something else you need to be aware of, because you've got a lot of folks like MTG and Candace Owens, and they seem to be leading the charge here. And they're saying, he's a crazy man. He's a crazy man. He's going to get us all blown up. Really? Are you sure about that? Are you sure that Donald Trump is crazy? We don't know what he's going to do. He's unpredictable. Yeah, it's true. Neither the Democrats or the media or the Iranians can predict what Trump's going to do next. And isn't that the point, ladies and gentlemen? You know, the president giving them this deadline, what is it, Tuesday, 8 o'clock, Tuesday night? Do you think the president is just dragging this on, or is it possible that President Trump is using this time to make sure that our military personnel are put into places where they are able to immediately go on the offensive? But keep in mind, when it comes to Iran, Trump did not start a new war. Donald Trump is finishing the war that started in 1979. And every president since Jimmy Carter, every single one, could not muster the courage to do what needed to be done. And it turns out Donald Trump, yeah, he's got the courage. All right. Hang tight, everybody. Again, we are waiting for President Trump to hold a news conference. That is going to happen in the next hour of the show. We will be dipping into that. We're going to be listening to a lot of that live, as much as we can take. And we'll have to do some breaks and things of that nature. Our telephone number, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. Ladies and gentlemen, we're just so excited about the new book project coming out. It's called The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America and the Future of MAGA. What does that look like? Well, I've been working on this project for the past couple of months now, just sort of doing a deep dive into what we need to do to carry the mantle once Donald Trump leaves office. And I want you to read this book. You can pre-order it now. It'll be out at the end of May, but you can pre-order it now. I want to read to you some of the comments. Our good friend Congressman Marlon Stutzman writing this. Todd Stearns captures the essence of the Trump Golden Age in this book and reveals why President Trump is the patriot our country needs for such a time as this. The Golden Age of America is more than a slogan. It is strengthening our families, churches, and communities, and every American-loving citizen should read about this national restoration as we celebrate our 250th anniversary. So here's what I would like for you to do. In the commercial break, head over to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever you buy your books, and you can pre-order online and get yourself a copy or two of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America. We'll be right back. All right, let's go right to the phone lines. We will start our day in Houston, Texas. Raphael, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. What's on your mind?
It was 1979 or 1980 when a suicide, the proxy of the Iranians, drove a truck into our soldiers who were stationed overseas, the soldiers' barracks. And over 200 soldiers were murdered in the attack. And I always wondered why we didn't start a war, like you're saying, over that, even that. And now I'm getting answers from you and President Trump. And if I remember correctly, they were saying that it was a proxy who did it, and, oh, we can't go to war over a proxy. And that's all I have to say, and I'm getting it off my chest after 50 years of waiting.
No, look, I'm glad you did. And, yes, that was in 1983, and it was the Marine Barracks in Beirut. And there were 241 military personnel were killed. And you're right, the attack was blamed on militants who were linked directly to Iran. So, Raphael, not only should we have gone after Iran in 79, but in 83, we should have completely obliterated Iran for what they do to us. And we kept kicking that can down the road.
Well, we kicked no further.
Are you good with what President Trump is doing here?
Yes, and I remember reading about him going to a military school in high school. And now a lot of people don't know his military background in that school. Back in the day, because I'm about his age, you went to school in a military school in high school. It was like going to a school. It's like going to a military college today. And he learned a lot in that military.
Well, yeah, it was the New York Military Academy. And you know why he got sent there? He was, you know, Donald Trump. I am shocked they're saying that he was a disobedient child. I know, Donald, really? Come on. But they sent him, and they say that in that environment that Donald Trump really thrived as a young boy. So from eighth grade until graduation, he attended a military academy. You're right, Raphael.
Well, thank you, Todd.
All right. Thank you for listening, and thanks for listening to Patriot Talk 920, great radio station. Let's go to another great radio station, The Talk Station, in North Carolina, out on the coast. Jeff, what's on your mind today?
Well, hey, Todd. I think Trump is very smart he's getting his information from advisors, probably like psychiatrists and stuff like that, and how to do the art of war and the like art of politics, etc. When he starts doing the bad names and calling people certain names, it's a way to get to them, and it's a way to get something moving. It's like a bully. You can't be nice to a bully because the bully's going to keep bullying you. So what he's doing is letting them know he's not going to mess around. And it's to me, it's just he has great advisors.
Well, I think he has. No, I think you're onto something there. And it reminds me of a story. If you remember back during the first Gulf War, and George H.W. Bush would always mispronounce Saddam Hussein's name. He would call him Saddam. Do you remember that? And a lot of people were like, oh, he doesn't know how to. No, he knew how to pronounce the guy's name, but that was an insult. And you're right, there was some psychological warfare going on here, and he was trying to really insult Saddam Hussein and diminish his, his stature. And I thought it was a brilliant strategy. So to your point, no, I think you're right. I think there is some strategy going on here, some psychological strategy. But Donald Trump was not worshiping Allah. He was mocking the Islamist. That's what that was all about.
Right. Remember when he called Kim Jong-un the Rocket Man?
Rocket Man, yeah.
that was to get to him, to egg him on, to get him moving. So I really believe a lot of this stuff. I believe that Trump doesn't go play golf and call everybody names. He's doing this for a psychological reason, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, no doubt. And by the way, over the weekend, and we'll get into more of this a little bit later on in the show, but the behavior of the media and the Democrats over the weekend was appalling. You know, they were like, where's Trump? We haven't seen Trump in 3 days. He's dead. He was rushed to Walter Reed Medical. No, Trump was, and he, oh my God, he canceled the Mar-a-Lago Easter. He's dead. No, well, Trump was alive and well. As a matter of fact, Trump was so aggravated over the fake media coverage, he was literally, they had to stop him from storming into the press briefing room this weekend and saying that he was alive and well. So President Trump really upset about that, and he should have been. I mean, it was just simply outrageous. The behavior of our media while our nation is in the middle of a war is simply unacceptable, and we should demand better from the media. Jeff, thank you for calling in. 901-260-5926 is our number. That's 901-260-5926. Dylan, how was your Thanksgiving? I told the staff of Newsmax, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. And they're like, it's Easter, Stearns.
Right, right.
It's Easter.
You can be thankful during Easter.
That's right. Yeah. How was Easter?
It was a great time. Had a spend some time with the family on both sides. You know, now that I'm married, I get two meals on Easter. So it's kind of the best of both worlds.
Well, that's not bad.
It's not bad.
So, yeah. So the thing is, now that you got to spend time with the in-laws, so you miss out on the rest of the family.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it was a good time.
We were down at the Peabody. Had a great time.
I saw the pictures.
Yeah.
It looked fun.
We missed you. We had to go for a smaller table this year.
Yeah. You know, the Easter Bunny, you know, he's coming around the tables. He creeped me out.
Easter Bunny still creeps me out. All those, like, the furries.
Yeah.
And, you know, and somebody had, oh, by the way, we got to see, this was pretty cool, though. You know, they do the March of the Ducks.
Yes.
So we went up to the rooftop. We always do family pictures at the rooftop. And they were doing duck training. And they were literally training the ducks. They were walking the ducks from their duck plantation house all the way to the elevators.
Plantation house.
Yeah, it's southern. It's a southern thing. It's a cute little plantation.
It is cool. It's nice.
So. But they don't have to work the fields or anything. You know, these are free ducks, more or less. All right, hang tight, everybody. Get into your calls, waiting for President Trump to come out. Going to catch you up on the top of the hour news. And by the way, don't forget, pre-order a copy of The Golden Age, How Trump Saved America.
Live from the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's Common Sense Conservative Commentary from Todd Starnes.
That's right. I love this American.
right. So, look, here's we're doing things a little weird today for this hour of the show. Welcome, everybody. I'm Todd Stearns. Great to have you with us. So President Trump is going to be holding a news conference. He has not done that in a very long time. And we're going to be talking to, or we're going to be dipping into the coverage of the news conference here in just a few moments when it actually kicks into high gear. So we'll let you know when that happens. We are watching our monitors, the press corps, and it looks like they are filled to overflowing there in the press briefing room waiting for Trump to step out. You know, we were talking in the last segment, there are a lot of people that are really upset that Donald Trump dropped an F-bomb on during his remarks on Easter Sunday. First of all, most of the people, how dare he? The most holy day for the Christians. Most people in the media have no idea what Easter Sunday is all about, and most of them didn't even cover Easter Sunday. But now all of a sudden, they're righteously indignant. Well, it's interesting, when you go back in time, Rolling Stone, of all people, did a deep dive into a brief history of presidential profanity. And if you want to talk about one of the filthiest mouths on a president, LBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson, who, by the way, Dylan, do you know where he used to conduct, LBJ used to conduct his meetings, if he had like important things to tell the staff? You know, early this morning, we always start out with a little staff meeting. We do it downstairs in the office, and we have plush couches. It's very comfortable. Guess where LBJ used to do his?
Can I guess the forest?
No, a weird guess? No.
I was going to put something out there. I don't know.
Not the forest. While he was taking a dump on the presidential toilet, he would literally have he would be sitting on the toilet, and he would have the door open, and he would make his advisor stand outside. This is a true story. He would make his advisor stand outside where they could hear everything and smell everything.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's one way to make people listen to you.
Yeah. So, look, this guy, he was the most profane president in American history. A close second. Are you ready for this one? Barack Hussein Obama. How dare you? You racist. That man was a saint. He was Chicago Jesus. Barack Hussein Obama. How dare you? No, but it's true. As a matter of fact, he once called Mitt Romney a bull blanker, like literally a bull blanker, and used all sorts of filthy language. And a lot of times in his books, so he's doing the audio version of his books, and he's just spewing these profane words. Speaking of Mitt Romney, you know, Romney's a Mormon. A lot of people may not be aware of this, but Romney doesn't use bad language. As a matter of fact, he used the whenever he got upset, he would say, H-E double hockey sticks. All right. Put a pin there, because we understand President Trump is now speaking. We understand Secretary Pete Hegseth standing alongside of him, along with General Raisin Kane. Let's go live to the White House.
By the military, generally when planes are knocked down in war, especially when you're fighting a strong group, an evil group, you can't really do this because you send in 200 men to pick up one. And it's something that's usually not attempted as much as you want to attempt. And bad things happen to that one or two. And in this case, we did two, and it might not have been attempted before, but we did. And we had great talent, but we got a little luck, too, I would say. And we were helped by a lot of people, a lot of great people. And it was an honor to be involved with it. It's very historic. This is a rescue that's very historic. It'll go down in the books. Late Thursday night, an American F-15 fighter jet went down deep inside enemy territory in Iran while participating in Operation Epic Fury, where we're doing unbelievably well, well at a level that nobody's ever seen before. The entire country can be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night. Both members of the crew ejected from the aircraft and landed alive on Iranian soil. I immediately was asked to make a decision. I ordered the U.S. Armed Forces to do whatever was necessary to bring our brave warriors back home. A risky decision, because we could have ended up with 100 dead as opposed to one or two. It's a hard decision to make. But in the United States military, we leave no American behind. We don't do it. Within hours, our armed forces deployed 21 military aircraft into hostile airspace, many flying at very low altitude, being shot by bullets. You bring rifles into play when you're going that low, but there are also certain advantages. And in broad daylight over Iran for 7 hours at times facing very, very heavy enemy fire. We have a helicopter that's got a lot of bullets in it. It's amazing. We just realized how good those weapons are. Those our machines are. Nobody has the equipment that we have. Nobody has the military that we have. Not even close. We're the most powerful military anywhere in the world by far. The flight crews and warfighters aboard those aircraft took extraordinary risks to rescue their fellow service members. This first wave of search and rescue forces successfully located the pilot of the F-15, and he was extracted from enemy territory by an HH-60 Jolly Green 2 helicopter. Fabulous machine, as our warriors faced gunfire at very close range. It's amazing that when you look at the machinery, what happened, that nobody was even injured. Meanwhile, the second crew member, a weapons system officer, a highly respected colonel, had landed a significant distance away from the pilot. When you're going at those speeds, even if you go out 2 or 3 seconds later, it's miles. It's miles and miles away because you're going fast. He was injured quite badly and stranded in an area teeming with terrorists from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, RUF group, as well as besieged militia and local authorities. On top of everything else, they told the communities actually within inside of Iran, the people of Iran, they were given a tremendous incentive to find this pilot. Despite the peril, the officer followed his training and climbed into the treacherous mountain terrain and started climbing toward a higher altitude, something they were trained to do in order to evade capture. They want to always go as far away from the site of the shoot down. You want to go as far away because they all head right to that site. You want to be as far away as you can. And he was injured, and he was an amazing, amazing thing. He scaled cliff faces, bleeding rather profusely, treated his own wounds, and contacted American forces to transmit his location. They have a very sophisticated beeper-type apparatus that is on them at all times. And when they go out on these missions, they make sure they have lots of battery space and they're in good shape. And this one worked really well, amazingly, saved his life. We immediately mobilized a massive operation to retrieve him from the mountain holdout. And he kept going higher and higher. The mountain kept getting rougher and rougher and really very, very hard to find. The second rescue mission involved 155 aircraft, including 4 bombers, 64 fighters, 48 refueling tankers, 13 rescue aircraft, and more. We were bringing them all over, and a lot of it was subterfuge. We wanted to have them think he was in a different location because they had a vast military force out there. Thousands of people were looking. So we wanted them to look in different areas, so we were scattered all over like we were right on top of them. We had 7 different locations where they thought, and they were very confused. They said, well, wait a minute, they've got groups here, they've got groups there. It's an amazing thing. I was listening to these great people, these great generals, General Raisin Kane was amazing, and Pete Hegseth was amazing. But I listened to the whole thing. It was pretty amazing. So they had all these different sites where everybody thought he was located. We think we have him over there because they have 9 planes circling a little area that's 25 miles down the coast. So in a breathtaking show of skill and precision, lethality and force, America's military descended on the area, the real area, engaged the enemy, rescued the stranded officer, destroyed all threats, and exited Iranian territory while taking no casualties of any kind. The heroic F-15 weapon system officer had evaded capture on the ground in Iran for almost 48 hours. That's a long time when you're in tough shape and when you're bleeding. It's a long time. When we left, as you probably know, we had two large planes, old, pretty old planes that carried a lot. We needed a lot more equipment going in than coming out, obviously, because going in, we needed to be able to scale mountains, and we had a lot of equipment. But the sand was sandy, wet sand, so we thought there may be a problem taking off because of the weight of the plane, and then we also had all the men jumping back onto the planes, and they got pretty well bogged down, and we had a contingency plan, which was unbelievable, where lighter, faster aircraft came in, and they took them out. We blew up the old planes. We blew them up to smithereens because we had equipment on the planes that, frankly, we'd like to take, but I don't think it was worthwhile spending another 4 hours there taking it off. So we didn't want anybody to have, we have the best equipment anywhere in the world. We didn't want anybody examining our anti-aircraft and other equipment. So these were large planes that were old and pretty old, and we blew them up, and we had faster, lighter planes come in, and they were able to land on the sand. We needed the bigger planes because we had so much equipment that we needed. We took three helicopters over there, which were very strongly used and couldn't have lived without them. They did, and they performed unbelievably well. And if you'd see it, you wouldn't believe it. They came off the plane, and these guys had them, the rotors were off. They rebuilt these helicopters in less than 10 minutes. And that was one of the more amazing things. These are helicopters. Small, unbelievably powerful, but small, very small, so it can get into certain areas. And they got them off the plane, and they rebuilt all three of them in a matter of less than 10 minutes. It's pretty amazing what the genius of these people. Who would think that? You'd think it would take 5 days to build them. And in some companies, it would take 5 days, and they wouldn't do it well. But they served us well. As Commander-in-Chief, I never forget the extraordinary risk taken by the warriors that we send into battle. And the genius, I mean, think of it, having a contingency of three planes waiting because we think the sand is so bad that we probably won't be able to take off. And the planes really got bogged. The sand was, this was not much of a runway. This was a farm, not a runway. It was a farm, but it did the trick. But to have a contingency as opposed to having to wait 2 days, can you imagine right in the middle? This was central. This was right, you would call it central casting if you were doing a movie for location. And probably the toughest area of Iran where we'd be sitting there. So these planes came in, those pilots came in so fast and so quick and got out of there. Everybody got aboard and just got 15-minute intervals. One load out. One load out. One load out. It happened. And we were watching, and we said, that's amazing. In many ways, I was almost more impressed by the contingency that we had than the fact that, you know, if we would have had a runway or decent soil, but it was an amazing thing. But we thank God for every single one of them. And the talent, the genius is not even talent, it's genius. It's the whole ball game, every one of them. If you look at what we did with Maduro, we went into a military compound, a massive, with thousands and thousands of soldiers, and within a matter of minutes. And he lived behind iron doors. There were steel doors, broke them down so quickly. And within almost minutes, he was in the back of these planes. It was a similar group. Incredible. We have incredibly talented people. And if the time comes, we move heaven and earth to bring them home safely. We're going to bring our people home safely. I want to thank every member of the U.S. Armed Forces involved in these historic operations. They really were historic. It's just not something that's done. And you'd understand it. Not that they don't want to do it, but when you're going into areas, when you look at these helicopters, when you look at the amount of bullets and everything else that they took, when you go into these areas, you don't come out like we came out. God was watching us. I tell you, well, it was the Easter. We were in Easter territory, I guess, but God was watching us. Amazing. Because when you look at the machinery, they took damage. It tells you, first thing I said is, these are unbelievable machines, how they flew back and not even much of a problem. But these two extraordinary rescues, because it was two, and as you probably know, we didn't talk about the first one for an hour. Then somebody leaked something, which we'll hopefully find that leaker. We're looking very hard to find that leaker. And talked about there's somebody missing. They basically said that we have one and there's somebody missing. Well, they didn't know there was somebody missing until this leaker gave the information. So whoever it was, we think we'll be able to find it out because we're going to go to the media company that released it and we're going to say, national security, give it up or go to jail. And
all right, let me jump in here because we are going to have to take a mandatory break for all of our affiliates down the line. We will come back. The president saying God was watching over us, over 155 aircraft used in the rescue, and the president also vowing to go after the leakers, which is what we certainly encourage the president to do earlier today and over the weekend. All right, we're going to be taking your calls as well, your reaction to the president's comments. Now, if you're watching us on our social media feeds, Rumble, YouTube, Facebook, you will be able to continue watching the press conference. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. When we come back, we're going right back to the news conference. President Trump stepped away from the microphone for just a moment, but when we come back, we'll be taking as much of that press conference as we can. Really fascinating new information coming out. By the way, this segment of the Todd Stearns Radio program brought to you by our friends at Newsmax. A new study finds 70% of Americans are not getting the full benefits they deserve, and we have five key strategies that could increase your Social Security benefits by as much as $188,000 over a lifetime. And we want you to get that free special report. Call 800-999-9690. That's 800-999-9690. We will text you all of the information on five key strategies to increase your benefits. 800-999-9690. Text and data rates may apply. All right. Welcome back, everybody. This is the Todd Stearns Radio Show. And as promised, we're going back to the White House. War Secretary Pete Hegseth is now speaking to reporters. Let's listen in.
Lives were lost. We leave no man behind, and that is not luck. It's the result of unmatched training, superior technology, an unbreakable warrior ethos, and sheer American grit. Our special operators, pilots, and support crews performed with near perfection under fire, and they were lethal. Just ask any Iranian soldier who dared attempt to get anywhere near that pilot before or during that mission. Death from above. Our troops turned a potential tragedy into a resounding demonstration of American resolve and capability. That's what excellence in uniform looks like. But make no mistake about it. None of this would have been possible without the courageous leadership and ironclad determination of President Donald J. Trump. From the moment our airmen went down, President Trump made it clear we will leave no one behind. The first mission, the first of two, was an audacious daylight thunder run right up the middle. It was authorized in less than 2 hours from that pilot going down when we knew where he was. And it was authorized in the middle of the night, because anybody that's worked for this man knows he's up in the middle of the night. Authorized immediately, without hesitation, audaciously. The second mission, as soon as we knew where that pilot was, and John was certainly helpful in that, also executed immediately. You know, I looked up at my screen when the final mission was complete inside our SCIF, our secure facility. And we have a running VTC, a running coordination cell. And the top of it read 45 minutes and 45 hours and 56 minutes. For 45 hours and 56 minutes, we held that call open for coordination. From the moment our pilots went down, our mission was unblinking. The call never dropped. The meeting never stopped. The planning never ceased. The president demanded rapid, decisive action. He backed our military with the full weight of his resolve, refusing to let enemy propaganda or tactical setbacks deter us. His leadership ensured that every lethal and non-lethal resource was brought to bear, that our forces had the authorities and the support they needed to succeed. When the president says he has the backs of our warfighters, he means it. And it means a great deal, and it's a big difference on the battlefield. President Trump understands that peace through strength is not a slogan. It is a doctrine that saves American lives. His unwavering commitment to rebuilding our military and restoring the warrior spirit has paid dividends in missions just like this one. Under his command, America projects power with confidence and brings our people home with victory. And that continues today, by the way. Per the president's direction, today will be the largest volume of strikes since day one of this operation. Tomorrow, even more than today. And then Iran has a choice. Choose wisely, because this president does not play around. You can ask Soleimani. You can ask Maduro. You can ask Khamenei. To those heroes who planned and executed these rescues, your nation stands in awe. I stand in awe. The chairman stands in awe. We all stand in awe of your professionalism and bravery. We serve for you. You embody the very best of America. To the rescued airmen and their families, welcome home. Your courage and endurance, the quiet declaration of faith amid the storm, inspires us all. God is good every day. And to our adversaries watching from Tehran, let this be a clear message. The United States military will go anywhere, at any time, to protect our own and complete the mission. We execute with precision. We control the skies. You see, we flew for 7 hours in daylight over Iran to get the first pilot. And we flew 7 hours in the middle of the night to get the second. And Iran did nothing about it. We fight with honor, and under President Trump's leadership, we win. So God bless our troops. God bless President Trump. And God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I know before I start, I know many of you want specific details in these briefings. We will share what we can, but I will retain what I must in the event that we have to go do this again sometime. And I cannot stress the importance, as the President said, around operational security. The Secretary and I will do a more detailed briefing tomorrow morning, and we look forward to sharing the details that we can. On Thursday, 2 April at 10:10 p.m. Eastern Time, 4:40 in the morning, local Iran time, the Joint Personnel Recovery Center, which handles the Central Command area of responsibility, declared an isolated personnel recovery event for a U.S. Air Force F-15E Strike Eagle, call sign Dude-44, which was down in hostile Iranian territory. The pilot and weapons system officer had both safely ejected and were isolated behind enemy lines. Following confirmation of active rescue beacons and on the direction of the Secretary and by order of the President, a rescue operation was launched with the stated purpose of bringing both Americans home safely. As the Secretary said, several hours later on the morning, after positively locating the front seater, call sign Dude-44 Alpha, and aware of an aggressive ongoing search by the enemy, a U.S. Central Command plan was approved by the Secretary and the President. Shortly thereafter, a U.S. Air Force Combat Search and Rescue Task Force, comprised of A-10 Warthogs in their Sandy role, and I'll describe what that is in a minute, HC-130 Combat King 2s, HH-60 Jolly Green 2 helicopters, and Air Force Special Warfare Airmen, a package comprised of combat rescue officers and pararescuemen operators, audaciously penetrated enemy territory in broad daylight to find, fix, and recover Dude 44 Alpha from behind enemy lines. This was an incredibly dangerous mission, an incredibly dangerous undertaking, but a filled promise made to every American warfighter that you will not be left behind. We will always come find you, and we will always bring you home. Over the next hours, the Search and Rescue Task Force crossed the beach, entered into Iranian airspace, protected by a fighter strike package, and moved into the objective area, all under fire. En route, as some of you have seen on social media, the helicopters took gas off the C-130s and pressed onward and forward up into the objective area. While this was ongoing and out in front of them, the Sandy flight of A-10s and other remotely piloted aircraft, drones, and other tactical aircraft were violently suppressing and engaging the enemy in a close-in gunfight to keep them away from the front seater and allow the pickup force to get into the objective area. During this engagement, one of the Sandy aircraft, the one primarily responsible for communicating with the downed pilot, was hit by enemy fire. This pilot continued to fight, continued the mission, and then upon exit, flew his aircraft into another country and determined that the airplane was not landable. This was one of our A-10 Sandy aircraft. The pilot then made the decision to eject over friendly territory and was quickly and safely recovered and is doing fine. After picking up Dude 44 Alpha, the HH-60 Jolly Green fight was engaged by every single person in Iran who had a small arms weapon. And one of the aircraft, the trailing aircraft, took several hits. The crew sustained minor injury, and they are going to be fine. A note for those of you that do not know what a Sandy does. Named after the flight call sign that did this very mission in Vietnam, flying A-1 Sky Raiders and A-7 Corsairs, a Sandy has one mission: get to the survivor, bring the rescue force forward, and put themselves between that survivor on the ground and the enemy. They are committed to this. This is what they live for, and this is what they've trained for over many, many years. The A-10 force and the rescue force did a fantastic job rescuing Dude 44 Alpha. He was recovered Friday afternoon. As I said, and the nation needs to know this, this was an incredibly brave and courageous mission, and a testament to the courage, skill, and tenacity of the joint force and our leaders. And especially a daylight option, having the guts to try means so much to so many. Meanwhile, the backseater, as the President and the Secretary have said, had continued to work and survive. Through the hours of daylight, Dude 44 Bravo, the backseater, evaded. Using every means available, the efforts of the United States military, the Central Intelligence Agency, and others were attempting to find and locate with precision Dude 44 Bravo, the backseater. A note on the backseater and the frontseater. The single most important contributor to a successful rescue operation is the spirit of attack inside the heart of that downed aviator. Their will to survive, their will to evade, their will to recover is everything. In this case, the backseater's absolute commitment to surviving made much of our efforts possible. On Saturday, 4 April, after establishing positive communications with the backseater, we learned, as the President said, that he was injured and actively evading enemy forces. And thanks to our interagency partners, we were able to get eyes on his location and positively ID him. Throughout this entire time, the enemy force continued to search for 44 Bravo, and the joint force continued to strike them over and over and over again. fighting off marginal weather in Iran and the enemy search for a second time on Saturday at the recommendation of the CENTCOM commander and at the approval of the secretary and the president, we launched a rescue task force to recover Dude 44 Bravo. Again, this came to the president and the secretary for approval, this time with a much larger force package based on the time that the enemy had to prepare to find 44 Bravo. Again, this force was protected by A-10 Warthogs using the Sandy call sign. And this force had one single mission, do everything they can to bring an American home. This meant having a plan, being prepared to execute that plan, and more importantly, being prepared for multiple simultaneous contingencies.
All right, and we are going to have to take another mandatory break here. You're listening to General Kane describing this incredibly dangerous mission. We're going to keep the press conference live on our digital video feeds, which you can watch on our Facebook page, YouTube, or Rumble. You'll be able to continue watching that during the break. We'll be right back. All right, President Trump back behind the podium. This news conference at the White House we've been following. Let's go back to the president live here on the Todd Stearns radio show.
Genius that called us from, he was 40 miles away, and he said, you know, we're seeing something moving up in the mountain. This is at night. And they kept the camera on him for 45 minutes. He wasn't moving, and they said, you know, probably wrong, but we're seeing something moving. This is a vast mountain, vast, thick, with bushes, trees. He said, we see something moving 40 miles away. It was the head of a human being, I'm telling you, it's moving. And then all of a sudden, 45 minutes later, he moved a lot. He stood up, and they said, we have him. And that was really the beginning of something incredible. We had an idea where he was, but not specifically. That's a big mountain. So I want to thank the CIA, too. I don't think they get enough credit for the great job they've done. Yes, please.
Thank you very much, Mr. President, for this great opportunity. Country, it has super army. You make a difference, Mr. President. Thank you for your greatest leadership.
Thank you.
I have two quick questions, Mr. President. What was your reaction when you learned that Kurdistan region had resumed exporting oil to the international market with your support as United States of America?
Well, I expected that. We've gotten along with the Kurds for a long time, so I expected that.
Another question, what would be your reaction if the Iranian people raise up against their regime during a case fire, Mr. President?
Well, they should do it, but again, the consequences are great. I mean, they were told you if you protest, you will be shot immediately. You saw what happened to the young wrestler. He was a great champion, by the way. He was a great wrestler, one of the top in the world. And he and his two friends were hung. And all they did was say a little bit about liberty. They wanted liberty, and they were violently executed. But the number is up to probably 45,000 people were killed. So, you know, when somebody stays in a house, when they know if they walk out of the house to protest, they'll be immediately shot and killed. And they issued that, you know, that was publicly issued. It's not a secret. That's why so many people say, oh, well, why are you doing this? We can't let Iran have a nuclear weapon. You know, we got regime change. We do. We're dealing with a much different regime than before. We're dealing with different people. They're smarter. I think they're sharper and far less radical. We have regime change, but we didn't do this for regime change. We did it for the fact, and my view was very simple. I saw somebody said, oh, he doesn't have a plan. I have the best plan of all, but I'm not going to tell you what my plan is. You know, they want me to say, here's my plan. We're going to attack at 9:47 in the morning, and then we're going to do this, and then we're going to. And if you don't do that, they say, I have a plan. These people know what the plan is. Everybody here knows what the plan is. But it's very unfair to say, you know, because I don't mind being insulted. I've been insulted for many years by the fake news. But you can't. It's so bad for the people that are so pro. You just saw two great, and John Ratcliffe, three unbelievable people. They have a plan. Every single thing has been thought out by all of us. But I can't reveal the plan to the media. So, you know, but we're just thrilled by the success of this operation. Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. You've said Iranians would be mad if you stopped these attacks. But why would they want you to blow up their infrastructure, to cut off their power? Wouldn't that be punishing Iranians for the actions of the regime?
They would be willing to, they would be, and it's suffering. They would be willing to suffer that in order to have freedom. The Iranians have, and we've had numerous intercepts. Please keep bombing. Bombs that are dropping near their homes. Please keep bombing. Do it. And these are people that are living where the bombs are exploding. And when we leave and we're not hitting those areas, they're saying, please come back, come back, come back. These are the people. I don't know what they do. All I can tell you is they want freedom. They have lived in a world that you know nothing about. It's a violent, horrible world where if you protest, you are shot. Remember the great woman protests where they had 400,000, 500,000 women, and they were all enthused and they were going to protest, and everybody said,
all right, folks, we're going to have to leave it there for just a moment. The president, again, holding this news conference, answering questions. We've got to take a quick break for your local radio station. In the meantime, you can go to our YouTube channel. We're broadcasting the news conference continuously there, also on Rumble and our Facebook Live. So hang tight, everybody. Got to take a quick break. We will be right back. Hour three of the big show on this Breaking News Monday.
From the Liberty University studio in Memphis, Tennessee, it's America's conservative blowtorch.
That's us. That's right. I love this American ride.
Todd Starnes.
Oh, yeah. All right. Welcome, everybody. This is the Todd Starnes Radio Show. A lot of breaking news today. President Trump holding a news conference at the White House, and we listened to most of that during the last hour of the program. We are monitoring that, and of course, you'll also be able to watch that on our YouTube channel over at YouTube, and just search for Todd Starnes, and you'll see our YouTube channel. You know, it's interesting, the media giving Trump a hard time over this vulgar language that he used in the True Social post on Easter Sunday, and now some of the nation's religious community is weighing in. This is from Tony Perkins from Family Research Council, and he says that that President Trump's profanity is problematic. I want to read to you what Tony Perkins said. While his Sunday True Social post on Iran may be designed to transmit bravado toward the Iranian regime to bring the conflict to an end, the continuing decline in language and decorum of our leaders is very troubling and should not be acceptable. Do you agree or disagree with Tony Perkins, ladies and gentlemen? Look, the way I see it, no doubt about it, there has been coarseness in the language in the country, but honestly, it's always been there. And when you go all the way back to, Abraham Lincoln, even Abraham Lincoln loved off-color jokes. So this has been a part of the culture at the White House and in politics for quite some time. But anyway, Trump getting a lot of blowback from especially evangelical conservative Christians. Now, our telephone number is 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. So, guys, I want to dip back in, if we can, to the president who is taking questions from reporters. Let's see what the president's up to.
Two instances. And if they did, in my opinion, I told this to Bibi Netanyahu yesterday, Israel would have been extinguished. Large portions of the Middle East would have been extinguished, whether it's Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE, or others. And you saw that with thousands of missiles raining down upon them. They didn't think they were going to be hit. They thought they'd be watching us fight. And all of a sudden, UAE got hit by 1,500 missiles. he would have taken them out also. And they were powerful. If I didn't come along and terminate the Obama deal, which was terrible, the Iran nuclear deal was a road to a nuclear weapon, a big one, unlimited. Legally, I terminated it without even much thought. It was so easy. I terminated that, and then the B-2 bombers. And I did one other thing. I had killed Qassem Soleimani, who was an evil genius. And the reason I did it, I heard he was going to knock out five of our military bases. And had he lived, I believe we would be fighting perhaps a different Iran right now. Because he's never been replaced, you know. And I did one other, but that this one was not picked up. Osama bin Laden. If you read my book, I said you got to take him out 1 year before the World Trade Center came down. So I wish you'd read the book. But you, as a president, to be a good president, I believe you have to have good instincts. And a lot of this is instinct. Yeah, please.
Thank you so much for taking my question, Mr. President. Last week you suggested that Europe should take the lead on reopening the Strait of Hormuz. Has circumstances changed now that you're issuing a direct 48-hour ultimatum? And secondly, would a new ceasefire include Israel, or would it just be between Iran and
U.S.? I can't talk about ceasefire, but I can tell you that we have a active, willing participant on the other side. They would like to be able to make a deal. I can't say any more than that.
Mr. President,
thank you
so much.
You've listed
the goals.
Please, go ahead. Who are you with?
My name is Diakud. I'm with the largest Kurdish media outlet, Rudaw Media Network. It's based in Iran.
Mr. President,
you said before that you don't want the Kurdish forces to enter Iran and be harmed.
Okay. So we'll get back in there when an American's asking a question. Who lets all the foreign people? I don't get that. Anyway, let's go to the phone lines here. Mike in North Carolina wants to weigh in on President Trump and the language issue. Hey, Mike, what you got for us?
Todd, I'll tell you, I started out noticing the language just was going way south after Twitter was purchased, and that was a huge battle over free speech. Of course, became X. Truth Social came on board, and it just seemed like it was open season on foul language wherever you went. You couldn't go online to any social media whatsoever without FMS and, all of that stuff. So, the danger, they're using that as free speech, and it is, but there's also, should be some standards there also, and especially for our president. So, I didn't like that whatsoever. I'm a believer. He's done a lot for Christian people. He's done a lot for the Christian community, for right to life, and he has. He's done a good job with all that. Let me just say this. There were a lot of things that came out of Bill Clinton's presidency that were not good for the country.
It's interesting you say that, Mike, because there are presidential historians who will tell you that was the moment that it all sort of came out into the open, because presidents have always been profane. There's no doubt about that. Behind closed doors, though, then you had the whole situation with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky and the blue dress and the cigar in the Oval Office. And it all of a sudden became, national news, and everybody was kind of forced to deal with that.
Right, yeah. And like I said, it's just all of a sudden in the last, 4 or 5 years, maybe not even that long. But I noticed it first again when Twitter became X, and the big fight was over. It's free speech, it's free speech, it's free speech.
Oh, yeah.
After that, it just seems like it's been open season on foul language with no standards whatsoever. Anyway, like I said, the president should be an example,
All right.
Speaking in public.
Well, look, Mike, I think you made your point here. I want to try to get in as many people as we can here and get their opinions, so I appreciate you calling in. Let's go to Debbie in Jackson, Tennessee. Hi, Debbie. What say you?
Hey, well, I say that I totally disagree with you. I think Trump by far has been the worst when it comes to speaking to the public and his mouth. And I've been listening to him, President, for a long time. And I'm going to tell you, if I was to have wrote what that man that you read, it would have been a whole lot harsher than what he said. And that's coming from a Christian woman. I just refuse to listen to him when he starts that cussing, and he starts it pretty early in the game. So, yes, I totally know. He shouldn't know that no speaker should ever get up and act like that. And I don't care if they're the president or who they are. If you're speaking to a crowd, you should show some kind of respect for the people you're talking to.
Now, Donald Trump, now, Debbie, I will say this, as a, you know, I'm a Tennessean, lifelong Tennessean, moved to New York City, and I realized right away that the average New Yorker uses that F word like we would say, bless your heart, or how y'all doing? I've heard people use that word, and it's a bit shocking, and I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying President Trump is a New Yorker. And New Yorkers, by and large, I'm painting with a broad brush here, they've got dirtier mouths than most of the rest of the country.
But still, and they probably have less respect for that the rest of the country also.
Well, could be, Debbie. Look, I know you're taking me to the woodshed here, Debbie.
Hey, I've listened to you for quite a while, and normally I agree with you, and I don't even call in. But today I just had to say, no, you need to back up and think of who all's listening to it. Women, kids. How can you even ask a teenage-year-old person to sit down and listen to that? I wouldn't.
It's so, fair enough. Debbie, do you remember Lyndon Johnson by any chance? Were you old enough to remember LBJ?
No. Uh-uh.
All right. Well, Lyndon Johnson, President Johnson, was, by all accounts, considered our most profane and vile president. And Debbie, I'm going to let you hang up because I don't know. I can't have this conversation with Debbie on the air. I know you'll be listening, Debbie, but I just want to protect the innocence of your ears. But Lyndon Johnson was known, Dylan, to brag and to boast about the size of his Johnson. So much so that he gave it a nickname that was used prominently around the White House called Jumbo. And on many occasions, Lyndon Johnson would actually, shall we say, take Jumbo out for a walk.
Okay. Wait, did he give himself that nickname?
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah. He gave himself the nickname, which, according to all sources, was quite accurate. And there's
Jumbo. So Jumbo sounds like Dumbo, like the elephant. That's him.
No. So, but anyway, he actually in cabinet meetings would unzip his britches to make a point. And a lot of people were shocked and horrified by that. Personally, I would have been out the door when he decided to sit down on the toilet and commence holding a staff meeting. That's where I would have drawn the line. But that's just me. Let's go to Cheryl in Jefferson, Georgia. Cheryl, what say you?
Hey, Todd. I just wanted to chime in on this foul-mouthing. Yes, it is foul. And yes, do I think Trump needs to step above it and not go to their level? Yes. But he has the world on his shoulder, and he was trying to rescue this pilot and do the most dangerous, you know about it, mission ever. And he's human. I mean, it happens. However, it gives fodder for the left and all those who hate him, and then give pause to the Christian conservatives. So I get it. It doesn't bother me. It shows his level of frustration and commitment and absolute fire to get the job done. But, you know, he gives them food for fodder, whatever.
Look, Cheryl, I truly believe that this, I don't think the president, this president does not go off half-baked, if you will. I'm watching my words. This president says what he says, and there's a reason for it. And I really do believe this president was sending a very direct message to the Iranians. And look, these radical Islamists, Cheryl, that's all they understand. This is the language they understand. It is very direct. And they do not respect any other, they don't respect anything else other than brute force. And I think President Trump stopping, you know, just shy of calling them, you know, goat fornicators, did exactly that.
Yes. Yes. I agree with you. I agree with you.
All right. Yeah. So Donald Trump had gone out to the Islamists and said, guys, let's just, you know what, let's just gather around the fire and let's sing Kumbaya. I don't think that's going to do the trick. This very well may do the trick. Who knows? We'll wait and see.
Yeah, they don't understand that. They have no clue what it's like.
No.
Most Americans. So, appreciate you, Todd.
All right. Thank you, Cheryl. Thanks for calling in. All right. Phones are lighting up here. 901-260-5926. Let's go to Steve in Houston, Texas, listening to us on Patriot Talk 920. All right, Steve, what say you?
Hey, Todd, man, I'm a long-time listener of your show. I'm a Trump supporter. I've supported what he's doing. Sometimes it seems like I know he's under a lot of pressure, but he's starting to seem like he's a little bit unhinged. You know, I was shocked this morning when I heard, you know, his social media statement to the Iranians. And what most people don't catch is when he's talking about bombing infrastructure and bombing their power plants, we're talking about bombing civilians. I mean, it's not the military running these plants. And, you know, I get it. We've got to win this war somehow. But, you know, I knew from the beginning, and I still believe, we will never destroy the Iranian regime without ground troops. And people need to realize that. We tried it in Iraq. You know, we can bomb the crap out of them, but, you know, a military with the size of the Iranian army, you know, there's no way we're going to get rid of them without. And I personally think, you know, if ground troops are sent in, it should be the Israelis. I mean, I don't want to see American ground troops over there.
Let's see what happens here, Steve. And I hear what you're saying, and if we do end up sending ground troops, I'm going to have something to say about that. It is that is going to be a step in a direction that will make this last a very long time. That is not going to be a quick fix. So let's see what happens. Trump gave him a deadline, 48 hours, 8 o'clock Tuesday is when the president set that deadline. And we'll see how all that plays out. Steve, I got to run. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for listening to Patriot Talk 920 as well. All right, hang tight, everybody. We'll be right back. Our number, by the way, 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show.
Because you're going into hundreds of thousands of soldiers along the path. I mean, look at some of the helicopters, how they got hit. So, yeah, there were people within the military that said it's a wise. And don't forget, how many men did you send altogether, approximately, for the operation?
I'd love to keep that a secret.
Okay, well, we are. But I will tell you, the number, I'll keep it a secret, but it was hundreds and hundreds of these people. That's pretty good. Is he central casting? But hundreds of people went into this journey. Hundreds of people could have been killed. Forget about the equipment. A lot of equipment. Nobody cares. Hundreds of people could have been killed.
Yeah, that was the president just moments ago. And the president, again, reiterating, Iran has until 8 o'clock tomorrow to make a deal. By the way, the president also said somebody's going to make a movie about this. And he said, whoever plays Bravo, is it Bravo 40, 44 Bravo? A dude, 44 Bravo, has to be good looking. Dylan, we're gonna send in Parker May's mugshot. I think, wow. Parker May could be like,
yeah,
You know?
He should audition.
Yeah. I mean, he's tall.
Yes.
Yeah, he kind of looks like an Air Force guy.
That's all you need.
That's it. That's it. We'll ask him. He's coming up in a matter of moments to talk about the president, by the way, in college sports. All right. Hang tight, everybody. Hour three is well underway. The final half hour of hour three, 901-260-5926. That's 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, the press conference has officially concluded. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Todd Stearns Radio Show. This feels like it's a weird, different show. When we very rarely do we get to cover a presidential press conference live, and I think that was pretty spectacular. And I want to give our team here a great big shout out. Look, Dylan, we got to talk about LeBron James, among other things, and President Trump stepping in to fix college football. LeBron James, he's cramping on Memphis, and I know we've got our great sports director here from KWAM News Radio, Parker May, and guys, I think we all know that Memphis is like the deadliest city in America. We get that, but only we can criticize Memphis because we all live here, right? Isn't that the rule?
I would say that's fair. Yeah, don't let any outsiders say anything bad because we will defend it till we die. And we may die here, but it's fine because we love it.
I think if you spend one or two nights a year here, as LeBron James does, you don't have the ability to talk this badly as he did about this city.
I mean, it's all true, but who do you think you are, LeBron James?
He was talking trash about the hotels, right? The hotels that the NBA players get to stay in when they're here.
Which are very nice, by the way.
They're the nicest hotels that we have.
So LeBron James making headlines. Everybody's picking on Memphis, and it just seems to me, Parker May, that there seems to be a concerted effort to try to move the Memphis Grizzlies from Memphis to Nashville.
And I really don't understand why. Because you think about Nashville already has a ton of great sports. They've got the Nashville Sounds and the AAA affiliate. They've got the Predators. They have the Titans. They have an MLS team. So you think about that, it'd be hard to fit them in. If you were going to move the Grizzlies, they'd have to share an arena with the Predators, which is not the easiest thing to do. And why would you take them out of this city who has loved them so much, especially through the ups and downs that this franchise has had?
You know, it's a fair point. And Dylan, I want you to jump in as well, because when you look at Nashville, first of all, they're not selling out the hockey team games, the hockey matches. They're not selling out the football game. They're getting this bazillion-dollar new football stadium, and they're not filling it up. And if anything, the talk I've heard is that Nashville would be in line for maybe a Major League Baseball franchise.
You're exactly right. With the NBA already trying to expand, and it will be right next to them trying to expand, Nashville's really hoping to get one of those two teams in the MLB, potentially in Washington as well. But Nashville is a big one that is trying to get there, so it wouldn't really make much sense for them to bring two teams on. And I think it's a really – they have a great case for it in Nashville, which is why I do not think they should take the Grizzlies.
Dylan.
I just think, can we just have one thing? Can we keep the Grizzlies? Because, I mean, this is our – one of the biggest, you know, money makers we have, right, is the Grizzlies. It's our biggest attraction. One of the biggest things that people come here from Memphis to do. And, I mean, to get rid of it would just be not good for the city. Also, the fans that – there's a lot of people that go out to Grizzlies games, especially now. The city's safer. Downtown is safer. So people are actually going out enjoying that scenery and going to games.
It's true. Only seven people got shot in downtown over the weekend. So, you know, it's...
Only seven.
That's, yeah.
Progress.
It's the baby steps, yes, right, guys? Yes. I think they're all going to live. Yeah. They should be fine. They'll get over it. But again, it's, you know, this idea of, you know, it was LeBron James who was upset because of the Westin, which is the team hotel, and he says that the NBA players just don't like staying at this particular hotel.
And I don't understand that. I saw a YouTube video, actually a YouTube creator actually went to this hotel this past weekend just to kind of show the experience of it. It's a fantastic hotel. It is right across the street from the FedEx Forum, so you don't have to worry about taking a bus over to the arena in the morning when you're going to shoot around or going to the game. You can walk or take a two-minute bus ride. Like, there's nothing to complain about for that hotel.
I will say this. There was actually a big shootout in front of the hotel, but it was two rampers. Was it the Pooh Shiesty guy, or was that somebody? No, he did something else. I think he and his dad kidnapped somebody.
Wow.
I'm not big into the whole rap culture, but anyway, you know, you had a couple of rampers going at it. What are you going to do?
It sounds like you're agreeing with LeBron almost here.
Yeah, well, I am, but, you know, I'm allowed to do that because I live here.
It's true.
He can't do that. He doesn't live here. And by the way, you're right. The hotel, the bathtubs, the beds, everything are made. The showers are made for, you know, people that are 12 feet tall.
You make a great point, because not only is LeBron James just completely unnecessary talking about it, and we said it perfectly, like, we live here, like, we've experienced the city our whole lives. For you to come in and just tear down the one part that you've seen in Memphis isn't really worth it.
And what is, isn't he from Akron, Ohio?
Yes.
Come on, Akron? Good Lord, what a crap city. No, we're not, we don't broadcast there, so we can say
it's
that.
It's actually really fun to go to Grizzlies games when...
In Akron?
No.
Oh, sorry.
So, sorry, this is like, when LeBron is in Memphis and he's playing against the Grizzlies, it is so fun because our fans hate him. LeBron.
Hate him. By the way, you know, I didn't realize this. John Morant is selling his house, which is worth, what, $3 million?
Yeah.
He lives in Eads, which is like where all the wealthy people live.
Yeah.
I figured he'd have like a little townhouse or something in, I don't know, Orange Mound or something like that.
Well, he may be moving there. Actually, he may be moving somewhere far, far away, because it seems like we're about to get rid of him.
KWAM News or Sports Director Parker Bate joining us. And Parker, the big story, President Trump just a couple of days ago signed an order calling for an urgent national action to save college sports. What do you think about the president jumping into all of this?
I think it's fantastic, Todd, that he's willing to step in into this day and age of college sports that is just littered with the NIL and transfer portal. And it's just been chaotic. And I think President Trump is trying to start the change of, it needs some sort of balance and way of doing things, because it is just pure chaos right now. The goal was to bring structure. I think that's what President Trump is starting to do. And I love what this has the potential to do. It would limit the transfer portal, put regulations on NIL to where you're not having college athletes go to five different schools in 5 years.
I don't understand why. I mean, it's such a common sense thing the president is doing here. I don't understand why the NCAA could not come up with this on their own.
That is one of the many problems the NCAA is facing right now, on top of trying to expand the NCAA tournament, dealing with NIL, roster construction. It's just a lot of mess that they're dealing with. President Trump's trying to help them out.
I love this idea. And speaking of that, the what is it now, 78 teams, 76 teams?
76.
Good Lord, guys.
We don't need it.
No. I mean, look, all you have to do is look at the NBA right now. I mean, there's a big problem within the NBA, and their business model is not working. And someone actually suggested cutting the games for the NBA down to like 60 games a season. But, I mean, now we're going to look at the tournament going on almost as long as the regular season in college basketball.
The problem is now, if you do expand the tournament, you'll add an extra week to that, which means you're going to have to push the transfer portal back, which means your college basketball season, you'll start playing games in first week of November. You won't be through until middle of April. It's such a long season for these college kids, as well as managing their class schedules and stuff like that. So you've just got to find a way to regulate it, and there's no need for 76 teams.
Dylan, what say you?
I mean, Parker's spot on there. So this is maybe a little random, maybe not, but I noticed as I was watching the games over the weekend, you know, Illinois was playing UConn. This may just be a random observation or something like that, but half their team, their top players, they were not from America. Like, two players are from Serbia, and then someone's from like Czechoslovakia or something like that. It was strange hearing the last names, because I thought that we were listening to like foreign basketball at that point.
Yeah, the Illini have gone to something called the Balkan Five. Five players from that part of Europe, and their head coach, Brad Underwood, has kind of leaned into the European recruiting, and that's part of the problem that President Trump is trying to fix, is you've got so many different players and coaches just trying to steal talent from Europe, which are professionals over there playing in pro leagues in Europe and bringing them to the NCAA.
May I just say, and this may be racist, but may I just say,
thanks for prefacing that.
it's kind of nice to see white guys playing basketball again. I didn't think
but
we could do that.
They're not from America. We can't get the white Americans to play basketball.
But they're baby steps.
Yeah. We have to go to Europe.
Yeah, we gotta, yeah. Well, that's where our forefathers came from. So
yeah,
I mean,
true.
I'm just saying. I'm like, oh, wow, there's a white guy.
His name is Makchevich, but it's fine.
They have to wrap his name around the jersey, so it just sort of... guys, I want to play something from Nick Saban. He's very happy for President Trump. Take a listen.
It really works long term without some kind of regulations, you know, something that allows, you know, universities to preserve opportunities for all sports, you know, including women's and Olympic sports, you know, not just football and basketball. And, you know, I want to thank the president for, you know, showing leadership and creating a roundtable, which consisted of, you know, college presidents, commissioners, athletic directors, coaches, to gather information as to, you know, what might help create some regulation that would help us long term be able to manage and fund all sports so that we can continue to create opportunities for young people.
Now, this is interesting because there's a story out of California, California Baptist University. Do you guys play Cal Baptist?
We do not.
Okay. So they're a pretty large Christian school. They've just announced they're cutting a good number of their men's sports just to be in compliance with Title IX. So their men's wrestling, golf, swimming, and diving is being removed. And now you've got three wrestlers that are filing a federal lawsuit. But, I mean, that's really, again, is that really what Title IX was supposed to be about, is like limiting the number of opportunities for young men?
It's a really weird case in the college game that you've seen universities have to deal with, because you've had it, as you mentioned right there with Cal Baptist, schools are having to cut men's sports or add other women's sports that they're not used to competing in just to meet those requirements.
Mm. Let's go to the phones here, 901-260-5926. Harold in Memphis, listening to us on KWAM, our flagship station. Harold, you're on the air with Parker May.
Yeah, well, I do agree with y'all that if you're from Memphis, you can talk about Memphis, and if you're not, you better not talk about it. I'm a Grizzlies fan, don't get me wrong, but can the Grizzlies make it here without the shortfall money that the city and the county pays every year? That's my question.
That is a good question. And, you know, that's a big challenge, is they've been playing to a lot of empty seats at the FedEx Forum.
It's a real challenge, and Harold, is a great question. And I think the answer is you kind of have to trust the process a little bit. And I think it's hard on the city when the Grizzlies have been trying to renovate FedEx Forum in the past couple of years. They've slowly made progress on that. But I think, obviously, this is a down year for the Grizzlies. Obviously, a bright future ahead with hopefully healthier pieces coming back with Zach Edey and then a potential top five draft pick, but it is a weird time when the city is trying to grow the team, and but there's no funding there to use it.
Have you guys seen Banana Ball?
It's fantastic.
Yeah. So have you guys actually been to like a Banana Ball? What's that like?
It is kind of, it's very unique. That's the best way to put it. It's truly an experience. You don't feel like you're just a spectator. You kind of feel like you're part of the game, which is such a unique role they have, where if you're a fan, you catch a foul ball, it's an out. So that's one of my favorite rules that they have. They are reinventing the game of baseball for a younger audience, which I think is that's what the Major League Baseball is missing. They're getting better with the automated strike zone and trying to get the younger fans more involved, but I'm really liking what the Bananas are doing.
I love the CEO of Banana Ball. He's so cool. And the fact that he won't raise the price of tickets is one of my favorite things about him, because his whole philosophy is it is for the fans. It's not for anybody else. Like, we're doing this because of the fans. The only problem with that is you can't get a ticket. They're all sold out. Everywhere you go is completely sold out.
So, you know, they came to Memphis and they were at the AutoZone ballpark and sold out for the two nights they were there. Then opening night for the Memphis Redbirds, and maybe 2,000 people showed up. And everybody's trying to figure out, oh, how do we get people back in the seats? Well, maybe they ought to take a look at what Banana Ball is doing.
It is a tough thing to look at, especially for minor league baseball and a team that the Redbirds have been playing good baseball so far this season, 8-1 on the year, but they haven't drawn the attendance. And I think something needs to be said that you mentioned, Dylan, the ticket prices for Banana Ball, they're very affordable for all families. Maybe the Redbirds need to look at limiting ticket or lowering ticket prices, $5 ticket nights, $1 ticket nights, something like that, to just get the fans there. Maybe you make money off concessions that way.
I think Major League Sports has outpriced, you know, the fan. I mean, honestly. And I was looking at, there were some people that were getting the tickets and the cheap seats for the NCAA championship game. They were watching the women, and you couldn't even see. They were so far up. I mean, who in their right mind thought it's a great idea to put a basketball game in a giant football stadium?
It is a weird argument. I've understood both sides of it as someone who has been to the Final Four a few times and sat near the top. I actually think it's good for the fans to have it in that football stadium, because now you might not get the best viewing experience as you would if it was at a basketball arena, but you're getting more fans in the building. It's more affordable for the everyday fan, instead of like if you played that at an NBA arena where the capacity is 17 to 20,000, the ticket prices would be tripled. So it's a tough argument.
Dylan, I have seats every single game for like football right there on the 50-yard line.
Yeah.
In my home.
At your home. There it is. Nice. There it is.
Can you stick around for a second?
Absolutely.
All right. Parker May joining us talking sports. We love it when Parker's come is in town. Our number 901-260-5926. This is the Todd Stern Show. All right, wrapping up a very busy news day. Talk a little sports with our good friend Parker May, sports director for KWAM News Radio. And, you know, Dylan, guys, while we were chatting, apparently now the Artemis II folks are now the farthest from the Earth than any humans in history.
Wow. That's super cool.
That's pretty awesome.
The pictures coming out of that is so amazing. Like, unbelievable.
You know, they fixed the toilet problem, too.
That's good.
And they had to turn literally the spacecraft to the sun because all the pee, apparently, the water, the fluid, froze. And so they had to unthaw it. And then once they did that, everything was fine.
Unbelievable.
It's kind of funny, actually, turning the ship towards the sun.
It does seem, though, guys, because last week we were talking about the aliens. I don't know if you believe, you know, they're telling us that apparently we've got aliens. And the government is breeding the aliens with illegal aliens that are coming across the border. And it's quite the thing. So we had a big conversation about it last week. But here's my deal, guys. If in fact we really do have these aliens and we've got all their technology, why can't we fix the toilet on the little spaceship? I don't understand that.
Probably we can recruit them.
I guess, right? Exactly. I mean,
it's put an alien mechanic or something. Alien plumber, I guess.
You know, I'm trying to figure out who are the aliens. I mean, if they are breeding, what are they doing with them? Do we have like a little colony of like alien people?
Yeah. It's a great question.
Way too many questions I have about that.
You know, it could be the Albanians or whoever we're getting all these basketball players from.
Yeah.
Uzbekistan or something.
It's like 8 foot tall alien.
Serbia, all over Czechoslovakia, just finding players in Eastern Europe for them.
I love it. All right. And when's the championship game? Is that tonight?
Tonight.
Oh, wow. On top of everything else, who you got?
It's a really tough game for me to pick, honestly. Michigan and UConn. Michigan, who's been one of the most dominant teams all season long, and then UConn, who upset Duke in the Elite Eight and then got a big win over Illinois in the Final Four. And Dan Hurley, we mentioned, he's such a controversial coach, but he is a winner. Going
he
for
is
his
a winner.
Third title in 4 years is unbelievable. Hard to pick against him in a national title game, but I think I'm going to take Michigan. They're a little too. They have too much size for UConn tonight.
Dylan, who
I'm
you
going
like?
UConn.
UConn.
Just because Parker's picking Michigan.
All right, there you go. We've got some adversity here. All right, some strife, gentlemen. Great to see you, Parker. Great to see you. Safe travels as you head back to college.
Awesome. Thank you, Todd.
All right, folks, tonight, 5 o'clock Eastern, the Todd Stern Show. We have a jam-packed lineup. We're going to see you back on the radio tomorrow at noon o'clock. Get out there and be good, everybody.